As I mentioned previously, as a real estate investor, you have a wide array of financing sources available to you. These sources include conventional institutional and private lenders, as well as less traditional sources. Creative sources include such things as promissory notes, partners, life insurance policies, and government programs. The more familiar you are with the sources that are available to you, the better able you're going to be to make knowledgeable and creative decisions when it comes to financing your purchases. If you encounter difficulty obtaining the desired loan terms from an institutional lender, you should seek out a private lender. To do this, check the classified ad section in your local newspaper. You'll find that there are private lenders who advertise that they will buy mortgages for cash. As an alternative, you can go to a local mortgage broker or even a real estate broker who represents or knows of private investors. For a resource on note sellers and purchasers, log on to another one of my websites, SheetsCoach.com. This site provides a portal to a service that enables people to search for notes to purchase or post notes for sale. Now let me talk about creative sources. The underlying idea of this whole course is to be creative when you think about financing your real estate purchases. I can't stress enough how large a factor creativity plays in whether or not you succeed as a real estate investor. The seller can be one of your best sources for creative financing if he or she is willing to participate in the financing of your purchase. Typically, the seller's participation in financing takes the form of a second mortgage, which is an agreement between you and the seller that specifies how much the seller will loan you and how much interest you are to pay, as well as the length of the loan. The second mortgage can be secured by the property itself, other property you already own, or by financial instruments such as stocks and bonds. When the required down payment is only a few thousand dollars, or when you're a few thousand dollars short, a flexible seller might agree to a delayed down payment of 6 to 12 months after the closing date. Offering the seller a high interest rate, say 5 or 6% above the current market rate, can help you achieve this. Many sellers would find this high interest rate very attractive and might even spread the down payment over a longer period of time, for example, 24 to 48 months. On a relatively small amount of money, the higher interest rate does not actually cost you that much more, and of course, it's tax deductible. The property. In some cases, you can use the property itself, even before you own it, to generate funds that can be used for the down payment. I mentioned earlier about a student who was able to get a local lumber company to advance cash against an agreement for them to cut existing trees after the closing. Another source, promissory notes. Promissory notes are agreements between you and another party whereby the party agrees to loan money to you in exchange for your promise to pay a specified amount of interest and to make a specified number of regular payments to pay off the loan. Promissory notes are used when giving the seller a second mortgage on a property. They can also be used with other investors. Let's talk about these other investors. Third-party investors can be useful sources of funds for no-down payment investing. Keep in mind that investors usually expect to receive a high rate of return on their investments. Potential investors can be found by searching the financial services section of your local newspaper or in major national newspapers or on the internet. The return is usually in the form of interest, but it could also be in the form of a percentage of the profit that you will eventually earn on your ownership of the property. Equity partners are another source. Equity partners can be invaluable as sources of funds for your real estate investing career. It's possible to make front-end compensation just by putting together the partnership and/or by managing income property purchased by the partnership. For more information about partnerships, refer to the chapter in my course titled Working with Partners. Another source, tenants. If you're buying an income property, you can use the credits you receive at closing from the tenant security deposits, last month's rent, and/or collected rents to reduce or eliminate the down payment the seller requires to sell the property. In some cases, such credits, combined with credits for deferred real estate taxes, can be large enough that you can leave the closing with cash in your pocket. However, I caution you to maintain the appropriate reserves for the payment of taxes and to follow the laws regarding security deposits. What about real estate brokers and agents? You know, real estate commissions are generally 5 to 7% of the purchase price of a property, but in some cases they can be negotiable. If an independent broker both lists and sells the property, he or she receives the entire commission. If another broker is involved, the commission is usually split 50-50 between them. Borrowing a portion of the commission or giving the agent a portion of the ownership in lieu of all or part of the commission is sometimes possible, especially when dealing with a listing agent. If the listing agent is also the selling agent, the commission will not be split and the agent will be in a better position to loan all or part of it to you. If you find yourself faced with some initial reluctance on the part of the agent to the idea of borrowing the commission, you might try to make the proposition more attractive by offering the agent a promissory note for an amount larger than the commission. For example, if the agent's commission is $10,500, you might consider offering them a note for $10,500, payable monthly, at a high rate of interest. Or as an alternative, you might offer them a note for a higher amount, for example, $13,000, at a market rate of interest. These notes could become due and payable in 5 to 7 years. However, don't be bashful about approaching the agent before the note is due and offering to pay it in full in return for a substantial discount. Before approaching an agent or a broker about borrowing a commission, it's important to understand how commission splits are handled in a real estate office. When a seller lists a piece of property with a broker, the broker's compensation is stated in the listing agreement. It is usually computed as a percentage of the total selling price. Within a broker's office, salespeople, we call them agents, have a splitting arrangement with the broker. Generally, the splitting arrangement, for example, is 50-50 or 60-40, and is predicated on the salesperson's annual productivity. While a seller will generally not know about the internal splitting arrangements, an informed seller does know that the commission due to the agent upon the sale of his or her property is always negotiable at the time the listing agreement is signed. In some instances, it may be to your advantage to approach the actual broker who has a listing on the property you're interested in. If the listing broker knows that they will receive a full commission rather than having to split their commission, they may be more willing to allow you to borrow a portion of the commission. Students of mine have not only succeeded in persuading the agent to take a note for his or her commission, they have actually borrowed money from the agent. In one case, the agent went into his pocket for $10,000 to make the transaction work. The agent believed in the property and was to receive a $14,000 commission if the sale went through. To make it work, he actually wrote a check to my student for $10,000 and in return received a $24,000 note secured by a mortgage on the property. There are advantages to becoming a licensed real estate agent yourself. As an agent, you can receive a share of the real estate commission offered on the sale of the property. This share may be the equivalent of 2 to 5% of the purchase price. In some instances, you may be able to use the commission as your down payment or waive your share of the commission to motivate the listing agent to present your offer favorably. You may also waive a portion of your commission and apply a portion to the down payment. In any event, the commission can help you in the purchase or negotiation of your closing. For more information on the pros and cons of becoming a real estate agent, refer to the chapter in my course titled Setting Up Shop. Home equity loans. If you already own a home or investment property, that property can serve as a good source of capital for you as a beginning investor. Many lending institutions make loans secured by the equity in a home or other property up to 100% or more of the property's value. The interest rate for home equity loans is usually tied to the prime rate, and it pays to shop for good rates. Some lenders offer a rate as low as the prime rate itself or even lower. Other lenders might charge as much as 2%, 3%, or even 4% over the prime rate. Most institutions do not charge any points for home equity loans. In addition, the originating costs of the loan are very small, and the interest paid may be tax deductible. The typical payoff period for a home equity loan, that is the time in which the investor is required to repay the loan, is between 5 and 15 years. Another source for financing is life insurance policies. If you have a whole life insurance policy, you can borrow against its cash value to acquire real estate. If you do not have a whole life insurance policy of your own, you might still be able to tap this source of funds by borrowing against someone else's policy. For example, assume that you need a $50,000 down payment to purchase an investment property and you have no whole life insurance of your own. To get the money you need, you could contact a local life insurance company and ask if they have a client with a policy that has a cash value of at least $50,000. The policyholder could borrow the $50,000 against his or her policy and loan it to you at perhaps 1% or 2% more interest than he or she pays for the loan. You, in turn, could use this $50,000 as a down payment and perhaps even give the policy owner a 10% to 15% ownership interest in the property as a bonus. The outstanding loan against a whole life insurance policy reduces the policy payout at the time of death. Therefore, if you use this technique, you could take out a term life insurance policy to cover this gap during the payback period. If necessary, you could even take out a life insurance policy on yourself, having the owner of the whole life policy that you borrowed against as a beneficiary. This situation is truly creative and represents a win-win scenario for all parties. You buy the property you want with no money down, and you own an 85% interest in it if you offered 15% to the policyholder. If you buy a term policy as suggested, the amount of the insurance does not change, and the individual still has the same coverage. And in addition, he or she makes a small profit on the interest rate between the policy loan and the loan to you, and finally they end up owning 15% of the property. Equities in real or personal properties. If you have other real estate or personal properties, whether it's stock or bonds, a timeshare, another income property, a vacant lot, a boat, 10 acres of desert land, or a diamond ring, it doesn't matter, you might have some equity in that property. You could use the actual asset as a down payment. You could borrow against the equity. You could create a note against the equity. Or you might use the property as additional collateral. Still another source, existing loans on the property. Many properties have existing assumable loans. If you find a property with an assumable loan, you can assume the loan rather than taking out a new loan on the property. Converting paper to cash. Some sellers are in a position where they're not able to sell their properties unless they actually receive cash at the closing. If you're using one of the techniques that does not allow the seller to receive cash, you might not be able to buy the property unless you can show him or her how to convert the note you are offering into cash. Let's look at a couple of ways that the seller might accomplish this. First, sell the paper at a discount. There's an active market of investors who are eager to purchase notes at a discount. While this is probably the least desirable way to generate cash, selling a $10,000 note for $7,000 or $7,500 is not difficult, depending upon its interest rate, the terms, the credit worthiness of the maker, and the strength of the collateral, if any. This process is known as discounting a note. Let's look at another technique, collateralizing the paper. The note could be taken to a bank with whom the seller has a good banking relationship and pledged as security for borrowing money. While the seller may be paying 3 or 4% more for the money than the amount received from you in interest, this is a negotiable point. You may ultimately have to pay the seller the same interest rate that the seller will have to pay to a bank if he or she collateralizes the note. Okay, let's talk about pledged asset mortgages as a source for financing. A pledged asset mortgage works by using an asset as additional security to induce a lender to make a loan. You use an asset that you own, or that a family member or even a friend owns, as collateral. The lender who accepts the pledged asset mortgage does not have the right to convert the asset into cash unless you go into default on the loan and they have to foreclose. Okay, let's talk now about lease options, one of my favorites. If you don't have money for a down payment on a property, a lease option may be just the ticket for you. With a lease option, there are two parties, one, the seller lessor, and two, the buyer lessee. With a lease option, you enter into a contract with a seller lessor, whereby you pay rent and may purchase the property within a specified time period. You should insist on having a portion of your rent payment credited toward a predetermined purchase price. A down payment is usually not required, but the option must be supported by some form of option consideration or non-refundable deposit. If you ultimately decide not to exercise your option to buy the property, you can potentially sell your option to someone else for cash. Government programs. Federal, state, and local governments can play a role in your real estate investing as well. Many cities and towns have real estate-related programs that can assist you, and these days, all 50 states have housing programs of one kind or another. Every state has a minimum of 4 housing programs, and some, like California and Wisconsin, have 25 such programs. Government housing programs are designed to help people own homes, and many of the programs are geared toward helping specific segments of the population buy a property or to making certain types of property more attractive to purchase. For example, the Department of Housing and Urban Development, that's HUD, their 203K program provides federal loan guarantees for private loans made to help families repair or improve, purchase and improve, or refinance and improve existing residential structures that are more than 1 year old. FHA and VA guidelines allow federally sanctioned 501c3 charitable organizations to gift some or all of the down payment. These programs accentuate already advantageous FHA and VA insured loan products by transforming them from a 3 to 5% down loan to a no-money down loan. For a list of common government programs related to real estate, refer to the appendix of my course titled Government Programs. Your services and skills can also be a source of financing. You see, sometimes you can use your own services and skills to reduce or eliminate the down payment that would otherwise be required to purchase a property. Also, your sweat equity can pay off handsomely if you decide to buy, rehabilitate, or resell a property. You'll recall earlier I talked about the process of inventing creative financing techniques consisting of the situation, the source, and the strategy. We've talked about the situation and the source. Let's talk now about strategy.